Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker, founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. We are located in Pewaukee, just east of Highway 164 at Capitol Drive. We're in the great big beautiful Town Bank building. We're also in the village of Whitefish Bay, and there we're in the Equitable Bank building, right on the corner across the street from Winkies. And we now also have an office in Bonita Springs, Florida. And if you'd like more information on any of the offices, if you'd like to see them, the interior, you can go to ellenbecker.com, and it's all right there for you. My guest today is Rachel Sheedy, and she is the has been named the editor of Kiplinger's Retirement Report, which has a 90,000 circulation, and it's a monthly publication, and it's for people to help them to live a financially secure life. And of course, if you've been listening to the radio show for all these past almost 28 years, you know that that's what Money Sense is all about, is really education and trying to bring things that are current topics that might affect you and affect your family. And one of the things that we talk a lot about is retirement planning and estate planning, and how important beneficiary designations are on our retirement accounts, our 401ks, our annuities, on how we look at our estate plan, how we look at our life insurance. And so today, one of the big topics to talk about, I think, is the whole idea of IRAs and making sure that you are maximizing any inherited IRAs that you may have. And an interesting figure is that there is about, I think, 10,000 people a day turning 70 and a half for about the next 8 years. And of course, that's my generation, the baby boomer generation. And as they're turning 70 and as they're looking at their planning and they're maybe in full retirement or just retiring, we look at our estate plan and all of that money that's going to be passed to the next generation. And to give you just an idea of how much that money is, it's $25 trillion is in retirement accounts right now, which is really amazing. And it equates to about 36% of household assets. So when we talk about this planning for passing retirement assets on to the next generation, either to your spouse or your children or to someone else or to a charity, we are talking about a big portion of a lot of people of their estate. So I want to welcome you, Rachel, to the radio show.
Thank you for having me.
You have a very exciting job.
I do. Mm-hmm.
Because this is something, there are so many people retiring right now that need this, I don't want to say help, but need this insight into how they can do things differently. But also the people who are saving money so that they can plan better going forward. Right. Often what happens is people get to retirement and they'll come in and see me and it's like, oh, I wish we had a few more years. You know, you'd come in earlier because we could have done so much more in retirement. So looking at these issues is really, really important. And how did you get involved in this?
Well, so I have been on Retirement Report for about 12 years, and I started at Kiplinger's on the Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. I was on that for a couple of years. But my father and my mother were very, they were proponents of saving in a 401k and IRAs and understanding the advantages of doing so and starting early. And personal finance was a topic in our house. My father was a longtime Kiplinger subscriber. So it was just sort of something I was used to and I was interested in. I kind of like, you know, the moves. I'm interested in tax strategies and all that kind of thing. So I just sort of had a soft spot for it and ended up at Kiplinger's and then ended up on Retirement Report. Opportunity came my way. And I didn't think I would be on the staff for 12 years, but it has worked out that way and have risen up through the ranks. And so now I'm leading the publication, which is really exciting.
Well, you know, you're in a unique place, because what I find with the baby booming generation, I'll just call it that, is that they really didn't have a lot of conversations with their kids because they grew up with families where money wasn't a topic that people discussed very often. Right. And so I find that a lot of clients that I will sit down with, they really haven't thought about passing assets and passing retirement assets to be different than actual assets. But at age 70 and a half, when they all of a sudden get the little red bell goes off and says, guess what, you've got to start paying Uncle Sam. Yeah. When they're forced into that required minimum distribution, all of a sudden it becomes a really important topic. And that's when a lot of people even search out financial help, because it creates a different tax situation. It creates a whole unique set of new circumstances. And that's kind not really what you're talking about, but some of it.
Well, some of it. Required minimum distributions is a big topic for us. And I think there's, you know, many things. Having worked on the publication for quite a while, there are stages to it. Like, savings sort of the easy part in some sense. You try to squirrel away as much as you can. But managing that nest egg to last 20 or 30 years, and then you've got all of these rules that come into play that you haven't had to, deal with before. And there's a lot to brush up on and to really understand. And RMDs in particular, there's a hefty penalty, actually, if you miss the RMD. It's 50%. It's one of the heftiest penalties in the tax code, is what I've been told numerous times. So it's something that you really do need to pay attention to. And you're not probably paying attention to it till you get up to that age. Suddenly you've got to wrap your brain around all of this. And the same is true with inherited IRAs. There are RMDs that become involved with that as well. So somebody who is younger might have to face a required minimum distribution just because of an inherited account. But when you're passing an IRA on, and when you're the heir to an IRA in particular, there are a lot of rules that you've really got to, get up to speed on and relatively quickly. There are some deadlines that you need to know. So, it's just, there's a lot to deal with, and just, for a lot of people, it's new to them. So.
Well, I just want to remind everyone, this is really an important topic, and if you aren't able to listen to the whole show, or if you know someone that this might be really important to, don't forget you can always go to ellenbecker.com, go to Money Sense, the radio show, and underneath it, you will find Rochelle's topic here on the IRAs and beneficiaries. We're also going to talk a little bit about Social Security today. So this is really a great topic. We're going to have four segments, and why don't we start out with talking about what if someone loses a spouse, because we're going to talk about passing it to grandchildren, passing it to your own children, passing it to a spouse. And these are really important. It's very important to understand that it's just not a simple thing. Like, you make a beneficiary and everybody's treated the same.
Right. Well, and there are different rules for spouse beneficiaries and non-spouse beneficiaries, which can be children or grandchildren. The rules are very different, so it is important to know, really, really important to know what category you're falling into and what that means. And so for a spouse, they actually have the most flexibility, so they get a little bit more wiggle room. It's a little bit easier. Say it's the wife is a survivor, she can take the account as her own, and she can do that at any time. There are some situations where a young widow would not want to take the account as her own right away. If she's under 59 and a half, up until you're 59 and a half, there is a penalty, an early withdrawal penalty, to get into an IRA. There is not that penalty for beneficiaries. So a younger widow might want to stay a beneficiary so she can tap that account. Early withdrawal penalty free. She might still have to pay taxes if it's a traditional IRA. But that gives her some access to that, easier, less costly. But as soon as she passes 59 and a half, or if you're older than 59 and a half, when you're inheriting the account as a spouse, then you most likely want to take it as your own. And you would just be able to put in your own name. Then the required minimum distributions, wouldn't happen until you're hit 70 and a half, as if it was your own account. And another particular thing to think about is whether you're inheriting a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA, because the payouts, the required distributions for a traditional IRA come with a tax bill, an income tax bill, even if you're a beneficiary. But the Roth IRA, you've got to take distributions, but they're tax-free. So again, in the sense of a spouse, if I'm a spouse who is inheriting a Roth IRA, if I put it in my own name, I would never have to take required minimum distributions, because as an owner for Roth IRA, you don't have to. As an heir to Roth IRA, you do. So that's, again, an advantage. And it's just understanding what you're inheriting as a spouse, what that means for you.
Also, when you pass And we can talk about passing it to a child next, but your own child, adult child or whatever. But when you pass the IRA to your spouse, it still maintains credit protection.
Yes.
And so that would mean, and many times we hear about, you know, somebody going through a bankruptcy or something happen, that IRA is protected for that spouse against any type of creditors, which is really an important aspect. Mm-hmm. But it has changed recently where it is no longer protected for your children once you pass it.
Yeah, I believe so. I've not covered that too much detail, but yes, there
and
are
that's,
definitely, you have to be aware of what protections are available.
And so with the IRA, and we can talk again about passing as an heir to it, there are ways that you can protect and still maintain credit protection, even though it's not credit protected as it passes. You can put it into a lifetime credit protection trust, which then instead of you name the trust on the beneficiary form rather than the individual. So when I pass away, I don't have a spouse. It's going to be divided between John, Julie, and Jeff equally on my 401k beneficiary form. It says the name Julie's trust. It says Karen Ellenbecker's trust for the benefit of Julie Ellenbecker. So when I pass away, my IRA will flow into her trust. There'll be no tax consequences. And now she has the credit protection on those assets as well, which is really important in the event that somebody gets into a car accident or they have a bankruptcy or something happens. Now those assets are protected for that child. And it's also protected then in the event of a divorce because it's isolated.
Right, right. Yeah, trusts are one way. I've written a story about that a while back, and I'm going to revisit the topic sometime soon. So, trusts come with costs, both set up and ongoing, often is the case. And they do need to be set up properly so that if you want to be able to stretch out the IRA, that the beneficiaries are able to do that. And they're good for if you want to sort of have some control over what happens to the money in the future. I mean, if you just leave an IRA through the beneficiary form, that money becomes the beneficiary's. So, mm-hmm. You no longer have control beyond the grave. So for some people, it can make sense. And if there are potential credit issues, the situations you just mentioned, there are definitely reasons to consider doing a trust. So I think it's something everybody should think about whether that fits their situation or not.
I think that really brings up a very important point that you mentioned, is that you can't just name a trust. Like if you have a revocable living trust, the Karen Ellenbecker Revocable Living Trust, I cannot put that down as my beneficiary on that form. You have to have language put into your trust that allows you to move that from the IRA into that trust without having a tax consequence. So you have to be very careful that you sit down and if you do want to get that credit protection, then you do have to sit down with an attorney and modify your estate plan or create the trust on its own. And that's a really important piece.
Yeah, you do. It's something very significant. As you mentioned, you need to consult an estate planning lawyer. You've got to be very careful with them. They can be useful vehicles, but just be aware that
yes,
it's not as simple.
it's a great vehicle because when we talk about credit protection and these lifetime credit protection trusts, it's really a nice way to be able to develop your estate plan to be at exactly the way you want it. And so often we do want credit protection for a whole variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. And it could even be that, let's say you have three children and all of a sudden, and two of the kids are doing great. They're doing great. And then, you've got that one kid that needs a little bit of help. Well, you really don't want him maybe to get several hundred thousand dollars upon your passing, but you want it to have a little bit more protection. You want it to maybe have somebody be the person that is going to be able to help him or her manage those assets, have a trustee. It is a beautiful way of protecting those assets. But you have to understand it and sit down with someone. That's what we do all the time, is look at all the options that you have and help you to make a good decision. But knowing, just knowing that there are ways that you can protect those assets, and then seeking out professional people to help you to figure out what's right for you is really important.
Yes, I definitely agree.
So now that we know that we want to change the beneficiary, if you want credit protection, let's talk a little bit about money passing down to your children. So like when I die and my money goes to my three children, because I do not have a spouse, what are some of the things to know about that?
Yeah, and so, and again, so I'm talking from a perspective mostly like, I'm going to set the trust issue aside, because they're due, you know, that can create more things that you really need to know about.
Yes.
But if you're just, you know, straight setting out names on a beneficiary form, there are rules that those non-spouse heirs would need to follow, and ways to maximize that account. So let's say there is a case of you've got three children who you want to name. And it is important, if you want them to be able to stretch out the account, you know, setting the trust issues aside, to put names of people down. People have life expectancies, and they can stretch out the IRA over their lifetime if they are named as beneficiaries on the beneficiary form. So let's say you've got the three children who are going to inherit the IRA. They're listed on the beneficiary form. They would need to split the account. If they each want to have control over their portion of the IRA, mm-hmm. Multiple non-spouse beneficiaries would need to split it by December 31st of the year, following the year the original owner died. And what that allows them to do is it allows each individual heir to stretch the account over their own life expectancy. And if there's a big age gap between those heirs, it could make a huge difference. Say one is 40 and one is 25. They would have different life expectancies, and the money would come out at a different rate. So you know, the younger you are when you're taking distributions, the more can stay in the IRA, the less you have to take out as a required amount. So that's a critical thing to know. And if there are multiple beneficiaries named and they don't split the account, then the life expectancy of the oldest beneficiary would have to be used.
Mm-hmm.
So again, for that younger beneficiary, it would be a little bit of a, you know, lost opportunity.
Well, when you think about it, I know that in one of your things that you sent me, you said that depending on the amount inherited and given enough time, the beneficiary may not have to put another dime into their own retirement because of the compounding growth from the inherited IRA. If you leave $500,000 Roth IRA to a 40-year-old heir, by his 65th birthday, the heir would have close to $1 billion tax-free if the money grew at 6% a year, even after taking an annual distribution.
Yeah, that was according to, there's Schwab.com has a great R&D calculator for beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to that and sort of play around with numbers and ages and dates and that kind of thing. And so that example comes just from that basic calculation. So, you know, if the market is growing and over the power of compounding, just that amount of time just, you know, makes such a critical difference, just, you know, generally. But, you know, in the case of having the money within a tax shelter, that helps as well. So there's a lot of positives to being able to stretch out the account.
Mm-hmm. My guess,
the other big
we have to take a break real quick.
Okay.
So hold that thought. My guest today is Rochelle Sheedy, and she is talking about, today we're talking about inherited IRAs, which are so absolutely important. And she is also, and I forgot, you're the editor.
I'm the editor, yes.
The editor of the Retirement Report, which is really amazing. So with that, welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Rochelle Sheedy. She has been talking on IRA distributions, and it's a really important thing when you think that there's over $25 trillion in IRA money that's going to pass to somebody, either to a spouse or to a child, or it could be a grandchild, or it could be a friend, it could be a foundation. All of those different things have different rules associated with them. So today we are, we're looking at, we've already talked about passing it to a spouse. Now we're talking about passing it to a child. And I interrupted you and said, save that thought.
Right. Well, what I was going to say was that the other advantage of stretching out the distributions is it's not only just to keep money in the account, you know, growing tax deferred or tax free if it's a Roth IRA. It's that you're also sort of mitigating that tax bill as well. So, you know, if you inherited a large IRA, traditional IRA, and you cashed it out, you could lose, you know, perhaps 40% of the account value. So by stretching out those distributions, not only are you allowing that money to grow for a longer period of time, but you're also mitigating the tax bill that you're paying as well. And, of course, that, you know, whatever your tax picture is, this is just going to be added to it. It could have tax.
Because every dollar that you take out of an IRA is taxed as ordinary income because you've never paid tax on it. So it's really important to look at what this will grow to and what will it look like at age 70 and a half so that you can plan. And you had talked a little bit about the Roth IRAs, which are really wonderful. And now so many people have the opportunity to select a portion or all of their contribution into a 401k to go into the Roth component, whereas the employer will always be putting it into the traditional tax deferred component. So there's a lot of different ways that you can skin this cat and save taxes and pass it on to beneficiaries so that they can hold on to more.
Yeah, and I think it is critical to understand that, you know, if I am a non-spouse heir and I am inheriting a traditional IRA, I cannot convert that to a Roth. So if you are interested in leaving your heirs, you know, if you want them to have Roth IRAs, you need to be the one to convert it. Mm-hmm. The heirs cannot do it after you die. So it's something to think about. You know, I used to sort of be suspicious of Roths, so they seem too good to be true. The more I've reported on them over the years, they're such a great vehicle, you know, and I just really, there's so many advantages. And, you know, part of it is you are prepaying tax, but it grows tax-free. It can pass to the next generation tax-free. You don't, as the owner of the Roth IRA, you don't have required minimum distribution. So if you don't need the money and you want to have it as a legacy to pass on to the next generation, it can be a great vehicle for that. So it's really something to think about. Maybe you don't want to put all of your money in a Roth or you don't want to do a huge conversion, but you can, you know, do little conversions over time. And with tax rates being so low, right, you know, relatively low right now with tax reform, and they will, we know they will be until, you know, end of 2025, there could be an opportunity for some people to maybe, you know, put together a Roth conversion strategy doing smaller amounts over time so that, you know, they will have the advantages of it and as well as their heirs who would inherit those accounts.
I have had several of my clients do Roth conversions at the most ideal time, and it's generally for most or many is that for those that are retiring a little bit earlier, so maybe they retire at 65 instead of 70 or in the 60s somewhere, their income is really low now because they're not earning anything. This is a perfect time to put the strategy that you talk about in place. You may have 5, 6, 7 years where now you can start converting some of that retirement account into Roth.
Yeah.
And do it at a lower tax bracket. Because what happens a lot of time for people is at age 70, if they have pensions or if they have 401, you know, the retirement assets coming in and Social Security, all of a sudden many people find themselves in such a high tax bracket.
Yes, which is sort of, you know, goes against conventional wisdom. You think, oh, I'll be retired. I mean, I'll have money. I'll be in a lower tax bracket. And that is true for many people. All of a sudden, you've got all this income coming your way. You know, I mean, you plan well and you've got these income streams. But also with that can come a higher tax bill, a tax torpedo, some experts refer to it as. So it is something, you really need to be thinking about. And as you say, in your 60s could be a great opportunity to convert, because it's not only, we know tax rates are lower now because of tax reform. As you mentioned, it's also critical what your own particular tax picture is. You know, if you are retiring this year, you'll be retiring next year. Mm-hmm. Your own personal tax rate might be a lot lower. So you kind of have to filter it through both perspectives.
And I do just, if anybody is sort of on the edge there and doesn't know what some of the benefits are and if it makes sense for you, please give us a call at 262-691-3200. And one of our advisors will be happy to sit down and kind of go over your individual situation. Another thing, Rochelle, that's really good for people to know too, for those that don't need that distribution out of their IRA at 70.5, that you can take up to $100,000 and give it to a qualified charity, and you can use that and then take the deduction.
Yeah. So, well, you actually don't even take a deduction. It doesn't show up on your tax return.
Yes.
So the qualified charitable distribution move that you just mentioned is an attractive one, and it's going to be probably even more attractive, is what experts keep telling us, again, under tax reform, because so many more people will likely be taking the standard deduction, and many retirees do anyways take the standard deduction.
Yes.
But, it's nearly doubled. And this qualified charitable distribution is really useful for people who are taking the standard deduction, because it just does not get reported as income. It goes to the charity, and you're not taking an itemized write-off, because if you're taking the standard deduction, you wouldn't be able to do anything with an itemized write-off. But this is a really ideal move for people who are charitably inclined and for people who are trying to find ways to minimize income, and, it's a very
and so often people, they don't realize that they'll be giving. I mean, they are charitable minded and they're giving, right, and they're giving, and then they're taking their 70.5 distribution where they could just give from that and
right,
simplify it. So they're already giving. It's just sitting down and saying, what's the best pot to give from?
Right. Well, and I think, part of I think the qualified charitable distribution is going to become more well known. Part of the problem was, for many years it was sort of, would be wait until the last end. It was part of like tax extenders. You never knew for sure if it was going to happen, but it usually did. And sometimes it was retroactive for the previous year. It made it hard to plan. But now it's a permanent move. So that makes it something that people can, sort of figure in from the get-go when,
yes,
they're, doing their tax planning.
And I just want to throw in here too that an important thing to note that I think is overlooked often is people say, well, I do have $500,000 into my IRA and my will says, or my trust is this, to really understand that the will and the trust are totally two different pieces, and the beneficiary, whatever you put on your beneficiary on your retirement account, and that could also be an annuity or it could be your life insurance, those beneficiary forms trump your trust or your will or anything else. So it is a legal document that actually tells you where that money goes.
Right. Yeah, that is a very important point to understand, is that, your will may say one thing, but if your beneficiary form says another, in the case of the IRA, that beneficiary form is what's going to be followed. So
yes,
it's also critical to review your beneficiary forms, at least annually, to make sure that they are in line with your present situation. Say you were married and you had an ex, listed on the beneficiary form, you never updated it, and then you passed away. It could go to an ex, even though you might have been remarried.
Yes.
You didn't change the form. So that is a really critical point to understand.
It's very important. We're going to take a quick break. Rochelle Sheedy is here. We're talking about IRAs and passing them to spouses and children. And we're going to talk in our next segment on to grandchildren. And I'll tell you what I've done, which I think is really exciting. And with that, we'll be right back. Sets. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Rochelle Sheedy, and she is the director of Kiplinger's Retirement Report. We've been talking about how to best some of the best ways of passing your personal IRA, your qualified IRA, your Roth IRA, to either your spouse or to your children. And now we're going to talk about grandchildren. And one of the things that I actually did was I decided to put my grandchildren as beneficiaries on my IRA. So I actually split up my IRA into two IRAs, and one of them is going to pass to my grandchildren, one actually to my children. And the reason I did that was because holidays and birthdays are so important to me and to our family that I thought that this would be one way, because they take a distribution, that my children could give my grandchildren a gift on Christmas and a gift on their birthday and say, this is out of the IRA that grandma gave you. And yeah, it just...
That I talked to who said exactly that.
It just makes me feel so good. Yeah. Knowing that it's not like giving them a gift of $100,000 and then they forget about it. Mm-hmm. It's that they actually will get something, this little distribution, whatever it is, they will get it once or twice a year from me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some big advantages to, I mean, again, as we were talking about, the younger you are, when you are taking distributions from an IRA, the less that you have to take out as required, and the more that can stay in the account to grow tax-deferred or tax-free, depending what kind of IRA it is. And so it just really, you know, can provide a great opportunity for that younger heir to, you know, really start off with a secure foundation for their retirement. So I think it's a great gift, and it's a great thing to think about. If you're giving to minor, you know, say you've got minor grandchildren who are named, there are custodian issues. You know, you would have to name a custodian if they inherit it until they become of age per state, which could be 18 or 21.
Right.
And then, again, that's when, in that situation, too, a trust might be something you would think about because, you know, say a 21-year-old and gets access to all that money, they might, you know, go out and buy a fancy car, not thinking about the future. So there are situations there where it's important to think about. But it's a great idea to... you know, pass it on to a younger generation and just really give them a head start, you know, to planning on their retirement, essentially.
Yes.
So,
I think that's a really good point. And so mine are going to be transferred into the Lifetime Credit Protection Trust for each one of my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So they will have it go into a trust. And one of the things to always be aware of is that a trust is taxed at a little bit higher rate. So when they take that required minimum distribution, that's actually added to their tax bracket. And for me, I looked at it, Rochelle, and I said, you know, they'll be in a lower tax bracket than my kids probably at that stage. And so it could go directly to them, but they are taxed a little bit higher. So it's an important thing to look at your, you know, talk to your financial advisor, your tax person, and ask what is the best way that I can pass this money on to my family. And that's why I think it's really important too, to work with someone maybe that's a little more than just a tax preparer that's just going to do your taxes, but someone that you're actually going to work with that's going to give you feedback as you start to enter this retirement age. It's never, in my opinion, been more important to look at your portfolio and talk about tax strategy and talk about planning in advance. You don't want to wait till you get to be 70 and a half and all of a sudden you're in the highest tax bracket ever, because all of this money starts passing at that point.
Right. Well, I think it's important too to note that under tax reform, the kiddie tax rules changed. And so say there's not a trust involved and you're just a minor grandchild is inheriting account, that money could be taxed at trust rates under the rule change. So it's really important, if you're going to name minor grandchildren as beneficiaries, to understand what kind of tax bill they mm-hmm. might face. So again, talk to an expert who can look at your own particular situation and give you advice.
Yes, and I've been in this business for over 30 years, and when I started, it was like, oh, you know, make sure everybody contributes to tax deferred, whether it was a 401k or an IRA or an annuity or whatever, because when you retire, they'll be in a lower tax bracket and they'll love you. We never thought that it would get to be $25 trillion
right.
in tax deferred assets that, you know, and I've heard a lot of people say, don't touch them until you have to touch them. But that's not necessarily the right answer either, because it may make sense to take them out earlier. It may make sense. I always look at my clients' retirement accounts like the big elephant in the room, and you can't swallow it all at once. You got to take it bite by bite.
Right.
And it just makes sense to start looking and reading like what you're writing and becoming aware of what options and what possibilities you have, and be forward thinking.
Right, exactly. Yeah, planning and being educated and understanding the rules. You know, a lot of retirement and, you know, pension thought company, they're kind of gone away. There's a lot of responsibility on the investor and the retiree these days. So it's really critical to, you know, make sure you understand the rules and look for ways to maximize the assets that you have. You know, you got to make them last. If people are living longer these days as well. So, you know, it could be 20 or 30 years you need that money to last just for yourself. So definitely important to be educated.
Nobody ever really thought about it when they were putting in $300 a month or $500 a month into an IRA. Nobody ever really thought, boy, of this $400, 200 of it or 150 might be Uncle Sam's.
Right. Well, exactly. So you have a partner with the traditional IRA.
Yes.
You have an Uncle Sam that you've got to pay when you take that money out. So that's the Roth IRA. If you're converting to a Roth IRA or if you're just, you know, contributing to one, you're sort of pay, you know, getting rid of that partnership, and the money all becomes your own. And it, I think there are many reasons why I think Roths could become more attractive
or yes.
Make more sense for retirees, all kinds of reasons. But,
I think so too.
To remember, as you said, that Uncle Sam, is there waiting for his piece of the pie.
Well, and a lot of people couldn't do Roth IRAs when we were younger. I didn't have the option to do it.
Right. Yes,
and so it's also understanding the importance to encourage your children and grandchildren to take advantage of it. My guest today is Rochelle Sheedy. She is the new editor of the Kiplinger's Retirement Report, which goes out to about 90,000 people on a monthly basis. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we just have a few minutes to touch base on a couple of things with Social Security. And with that, we'll be back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. We are covering a little bit of Social Security and beneficiary designations on IRAs. My guest today is Rachel Sheedy, and as I've said a couple times, she is really the expert over there at Kiplinger's, helping us to understand exactly some of the things that we need to be aware of so that we make the best decisions about our beneficiaries and making sure that we get the best tax consequences as well. One of the things that I did mention earlier that there's this big shock that happens in with Social Security for many people is, and today Rochelle is going to talk Rachel, oh, I keep saying that. I'm sorry.
That's
is going
okay,
to
no
talk
worries.
Is going to talk about the Social Security and the benefits to waiting until you're 70. But also, then I say that is such a great strategy. But at 70, also is when the money comes out of the required minimum distribution out of your IRA. So you really have to factor those two things in to know where you're going to be in terms of tax. And it becomes even more important if you have any additional income coming in or you have pension money coming in. You could find yourself in a huge tax liability. So there's so many strategies here. Being educated is the most important. And what are some of the things that people need to know about that Social Security?
Well, so I think there's a number of things. And one thing to think about, you know, as you're talking about the tax torpedo issue at 70, we are big proponents of delaying Social Security until age 70 because you earn 8% a year in delayed retirement credits after your full retirement age, the longer you wait, up to 70. So maybe you need some money, though, you know, while you're waiting for that boosted benefit. So one thing you could do is maybe withdraw from your IRA before you have to sort of mitigate the tax bill, the long-term, and reduce your RMDs a little bit. So that's there's some studies that have been done that show that could be advantageous. So something to think about. And again, the main reason why we really experts have told us, you know, that it can be incredibly smart to wait until 70 if you can afford to do it on your Social Security benefit is because of those delayed retirement credits for people whose full retirement age was 66. That age is starting to climb for people turning 62 now, but that could be worth 32% more. And that boosted benefit, not only for you when you turn 70, but if you're married, your spouse, the surviving spouse, can get 100% of that boosted benefit. So, you know, say you wait to 70, and unfortunately you pass away at 71, if your surviving spouse takes over that benefit, she'll like lose her own, but she'll get the 100% of the boosted benefit. And she lives 25 or 30 years, that benefit's going to last those several decades. So It's a really critical strategy for couples in particular to think about. Both spouses don't necessarily have to wait till 70, but if the higher earner, figure out who that is, even if it's just by a dollar or two in terms of the benefit, and try to have that person wait until 70, if nothing else. And it can pay off dividends in the future. It's hard to delay gratification on giving money, but it's a strategy we've seen work really well. And there are some people, a few people, who are still able to make use of a strategy called restricting an application, where a person can take a spousal benefit, restrict their own application, allow their own benefit to grow. If you were born before January 2nd, 1954, and you're married, you might be able to take advantage of that strategy. So it's something to learn a little bit more about. Come to Kiplinger.com. You can find information there to see if you qualify for that and how it can be helpful.
I think waiting for that 70 and a half is often so beneficial because in those last 4 years, it grows at 8% a year, which is really, I mean, who can promise an 8% growth strategy four years in a row? I mean, that's really hard because we can't predict markets. We can't predict a lot of things. But where I'm seeing that it's playing a very important part in people's long-term planning is that if you take the spouse who makes a smaller amount, and you take that Social Security, if you can afford to do this, and you let the 70 grow to the higher earner, as you suggested, grow to 70 and a half, it becomes a very important strategy at the point that one of the spouses dies and they have to go into a retirement community. Because that is, I mean, they love it. It's a guaranteed amount of money until that person dies that is going to be available to pay towards healthcare costs.
Right. It's an inflation-adjusted stream of income. You can't outlive it. So it's a really critical piece. It's hard to find that these days. You know, so many people have 401ks and IRAs, and you can create an income stream from those assets. But Social Security is a different animal, and so it's a good way to maximize or provide a foundation of income. You can do that with annuities, and if you have a pension, it can be similar as well.
Yes.
So it just sort of depends what you have available, but maximizing Social Security benefits, I just think it would be such a smart strategy and for so many people. And it can be hard to wait. I've had to convince my own father that it was smart, but, he followed through. And it's I just think it's a really something that people really need to consider thinking about doing.
And again, it boils down to talk to your tax advisor, talk to your financial advisor. If you don't have one, please come in and see us. So I'm single. I intend on working for a very long time. And when I sat down with my tax person, she said, you know, Karen, you might as well take it. Yes, you could get the 8% growth every year, but you might as well take it now and save it for whatever it is important to you to save it, because you're always going to be in the higher tax bracket. And as long as you're going to keep working and you don't have a spouse to grow it for,
right, so that makes a big difference.
Yeah, you might just take it. So I started taking mine based on that, even though it was like, I'm going, ooh, that 8% sounds really good.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to say. It's a little bit harder when you're
single.
I mean, if you are single, there's, if you have an ex, you might qualify for a spousal benefit, often ex. Right, there are certain rules you have to meet to be able to do that, but people should be aware of that. If they're single now but they weren't before, they mm-hmm. might have a benefit available to them. And also, if that ex passes away, they might be able to qualify for a survivor benefit. So if
yes.
you're in that situation, go to SSA.gov, look at Kiplinger.com, see if you qualify for a benefit.
I think the big key to start with right there is if you've been married 10 years or longer.
Right, exactly.
That's kind of the key. If you've been married to someone for 10 years, are divorced, then you have the possibility as a look back onto that Social Security benefit to see if it's higher than yours and if it might make sense to drop yours and take theirs.
Yeah, there's definitely some issues that you need to think about if you're in that situation. But if you're possibly eligible, look into it.
What else would you like to? We only have about a minute and a half left. What else would you like? I mean, you've got this great brochure on 10 things you must know about Social Security. We also have classes at Ellen Becker Investment Group, several a year, just talking strictly about Social Security and some of the things that you need to know. And when Rochelle and I were talking, Rachel and I were talking over the break, it's really education. There's a lot of information out there for people to really bone up on so that they can look at their own individual situation.
Yeah, exactly. Again, the same with IRAs. Social Security has many rules, and so you've got to educate yourself on those rules and then filter your own situation through those rules to see, you know, what might be the best claiming strategy for you. So there's definitely, retirement brings many things that you've got to brush up on.
Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time today to go over all of this. And we wish you the best of luck in your new appointment as editor of Kiplinger's Retirement Report. You're doing such a great service to the community because, as I said, there's 10,000 people a day turning 70 and a half and looking at retirement. And some people work longer, some people work less, but the issues are there, and passing wealth on is such an important piece. So I thank you so very much. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and your financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always, 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 always listen. Have a really great weekend.